This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton. The real-life murder that inspired Twin Peaks. These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
This hour is brought to you by Jewel Osco.
Sacked. Tyler Gordon, his first of the season.
On second down, it's Hasty again. And caught from behind. There's Kyler Gordon. Boy, did they miss him out the last two games with a hamstring, and they're thrilled to get Gordon back into that secondary.
Here's one thrown. What an effort by Kyler Gordon.
Kyler Gordon blew it up from the secondary.
I love this Kyler Gordon.
The Score Midday Show, 10-2 on 670 The Score.
We're just going down the list at this point. Ryan Poles has a to-do list. He has things he wants to get done. He has told us about things that he wants to and needs to get done. And you can cross Kyler Gordon off the list of to-do, if you will. Going back to the first player that was drafted by Ryan Poles back in 2022, he's now got a three-year, $40 million extension with $31.25 million of that guaranteed. And that's how we will begin this third hour on Score Middays. Mark Grody, Marshall Harris, Layla Rahimi has the day off. And Mark, the initial reaction for me on this was, oh, as expected, he got paid. Now, maybe I wasn't expecting him to get the largest contract ever for a slot cornerback, but it tracks if you look at the simple trajectory of the salary cap and where it's headed. It's not going to stay the biggest contract for a slot cornerback for more than a year, I would imagine.
He probably not. I mean, you're right. That's just the way it works. I'm not saying that I thought that he would become the highest paid slot corner in the league necessarily, but there was a path here because we all saw the way he has been playing for the last couple of years and is an excellent cornerback, a good physical player, not just good in coverage, but good at tackling, a just very present player. But guess what? The rest of the National Football League was catching on to it as well. And sometimes that's your best friend when you start to get a reputation. I remember Troy Aikman saying in one of the primetime games, saying what you and I are saying, that he's one of the best slot cornerbacks in the league. That kind of stuff carries more weight than people even know. Because as a player starts to get that attention, that reputation, everybody starts to look at that player. And then the Bears say, oh, look at what we have here. And as you said, that's the first pick by Ryan Poles when he came here. So it's a development success story, too, and you have to take those seriously, and you have to keep those in your building. So, yeah, I mean, I think that this is just a big win for the Bears, and that Kyler Gordon go right back in here, and now he can calm down and relax and not worry about anything for a while.
Yeah, it's good for Kyler Gordon to get paid, to see the labor that he's put in pay off in a contract that makes him at $13.3 million per season, the highest AAV at that slot cornerback position. Let's go back to Ryan Poles. Back on April 1st, not April Fool's, April 1st, because we're going to separate those two things, because he was being dead serious on his desire to extend Kyler Gordon.
Yeah, no, that'll still be a priority. You know, for me, on our exit meetings at the end of last season, you know, I told a lot of the guys, in terms of future, if it was contracts or coming back, anything like that, you know, the important thing is I got to get with our current and new, you know, the new coaching staff and kind of see how the different players fit based on what scheme we're going to be running. So we've been able to have those conversations, and I know Kyler is a guy that, you know, we want a part of this moving forward. So you know, the time of that, I'm not sure how that all is going to work out, but that is a priority.
When I saw that he was getting the highest annual average value at that 13.3, it had me thinking, okay, he's being told by the money that he's one of, if not the best, at that position. But then I started thinking about the Bears defense, and I realized, oh, he's also a top five player on the Bears defense, and I don't think he's five.
Can you want to do the drill? Should we rank? Should we do this right?
Let's do it right now. Let's do as far as defense on the Bears. Yeah. Who's their best player?
Let's do this. Is it okay? Overall, let's even say like Montez Sweat. Let's face it, had a bad year last year.
He did.
I think Montez Sweat's still probably close. Let's go Jalen Johnson or Montez Sweat for the best.
I'm going Jalen Johnson. Okay. That's my number one.
So here's number one. Then can I have Sweat for number two? Can we go Sweat two?
I'll give it to you.
Okay. You don't have to.
This is kind of my point, though. After that, talk to me.
Okay.
Because there's two options in my mind. There's two options.
TJ Edwards.
Uh-huh. Okay. And it's Kyler Gordon.
TJ Edwards, three? Yeah, let's go TJ Edwards, three. He seems to have been more impactful on the overall, just making more play because of the nature of
his
position.
And he's on the field more also.
So we'll go four Kyler Gordon. Who is the fifth best player on the Chicago Bears defense?
I would say, as of right now,
yes,
it's probably one of your imports. It's not anybody. No one. Dio Bingo and then
Grady Jarrett.
Grady Jarrett. It might be Grady Jarrett.
I wasn't even thinking about that.
But I'm saying. But that kind of tells you where this defense is.
Yeah.
In that, how quickly you run out of guys to throw into your top whatever. That's the point.
Is it Tremaine Edmonds?
No.
It's not.
I'm here to tell you no.
Is it Jervon Dexter? No. It's probably not.
And this is the problem with the Bears defense from a year ago.
Oh, man. I didn't think the Bears had a problem on defense, but maybe they do.
What?
No, of course they do.
They can't get to the quarterback.
They can't get to the quarterback, and they still... Well, now they've got a three technique.
Yes.
Grady Jarrett.
Exactly.
Right?
Maybe it
is Grady Jarrett.
So, again, I think Grady Jarrett...
It's not Tyreek Stevenson?
I wish you could see my face on the...
No.
Terrell Smith? No.
Again.
Kevin Byard?
Kyler Gordon.
Yeah, Byard?
Byard's in that mid-tier mix. But my point is, Kyler Gordon's got to feel like, after getting this new contract, like, yeah, they know who I am. There's no doubt. We skipped over that whole part where Jalen Johnson and his contract negotiations got fuzzy, like, because is he going to get his money or not? No one at any point thought Kyler Gordon wasn't getting his money. And then we were just, maybe he was pleasantly surprised with how much money he got compared to other slot corners in the league.
We forgot a name. I am ashamed of myself. You shouldn't feel as bad. I'm the one that covers the Bears every day, so I feel ashamed right now. Andrew freaking Billings.
No, I was going to bring up Billings. Okay. I was going to bring up Billings, but he didn't play the back half of last season.
But I'm talking about in general, right? Like, okay. Montez Sweat had a bad year last year. I still think he's the second best defensive player on the Bears. Or maybe I'm saying that... Have you lost it? Hold on a second. Have you lost it for Montez Sweat?
Why was Montez Sweat brought here? To do what?
To get to the quarterback.
Did they get to the quarterback last season? It's a yes or no question. Did they satisfactorily get to the quarterback?
No, they did not.
Here's
the problem. I'm the only one, I feel like, in the media that has been fighting the Dio Dangbo thing. Like, people are like, watch the tape, Grody. Watch the tape. He does a lot of stuff. 3.5 sacks.
Yeah, but some people consider pressures, and I know this is contrary to what popular opinion is, but some people say a pressure is just as good as a sack from an analytic standpoint, because you got there, you might not have brought him down, but you're affecting the play.
Is it to you, Marshall? I mean, would you rather 3.5? Would you rather all that stuff that you got to watch the tape for? Would you rather see Dio Dangbo get 12 sacks?
I'd rather see Dio.
That's the answer. Yeah. Okay. So wait, I got Billings at five, by the way. Billings at five, even though you want to put an import there, don't you?
But let's just go back over what I said. Okay. I said Kyler Gordon is a top five Bears defender, and he's not number five. That was my overall point.
Okay.
Are you with me on that premise?
Yeah, no, I am. I'm with you on that premise.
Okay, so I just want Kyler Gordon to get his due, but at the same time saying some of this is relative to not good enough defenders on the Bears.
Yeah, or
impact players.
Yeah, well, you're right. In the case of Montez Sweat, at least last year, and maybe it's the outlier, last year not getting to the quarterback enough, but really even earlier before last year, Montez Sweat was not necessarily getting to the quarterback, but there is the Sweat effect, right? Do you believe in the Montez effect, the Sweat effect? Do you not believe in that all of a sudden, Marshall?
I'm unconvinced that it is as sweaty as it should be. How about that? 312-644-6767. You can text us to chime in here on Score Middays with Marshall Harris and Mark Grody. And listen, if you think Kyler Gordon is below four, let me know who takes that spot. I just think based on what he's done over the last two seasons, the consistency that's been there, both in the running game and in coverage, he has been multifaceted in his ability to make things happen.
Oh, yeah. And I think the part about his game that I really love that's like was low key early on is the physical part. Like, he will lay the wood. And I think that when he first came in, I think that because we all made such a big deal about the ballet thing, that there was this misconception that somehow he wasn't going to hurt guys when he went out there and lay the lumber. And he does that. Like, he is a complete football player.
He's so complete that when we were trying to get hints, clues to how this internal audit was going with Ben Johnson and his coaching staff, because the first thing you want to know when you hire a new coaching staff is, okay, well, how do they see the players that they already have under contract who are still with the team? Who's most likely to be released? What positions do they feel like need to be upgraded? And it was very telling that the defensive coordinator, Dennis Allen, in his intro press conference, he wasn't naming names, but he named that name.
He named that name. Ben Johnson named that name. He's just a player that, you know who was like that last year, or when the Flus regime took over and even Poles, was Cole Kmet. And I know that's, we're completely different thing, different position, different side of the ball, but he was like that exemplary guy who is going to do everything right. And that's kind of like Kyler Gordon. Add that to Jalen Johnson, who does everything right. He gets his 4 years, $76 million, as you kind of alluded to earlier. So you're packing a punch when it comes to the money that you have spent in your secondary at this point.
Well, I think that the two things, and the reason that's not necessarily even apples and oranges, but it's hard to compare the Cole Kmet comments to the Kyler Gordon. When it's a guy like Cole Kmet, a skill position player, you have to find ways to get the ball in his hands.
Yeah.
Kyler Gordon, you just turn him loose.
Yeah.
He can do what you do.
He can put the ball in his hands whenever he feels like it. Go out there and get it. Do you want to do the top five offensive players?
We're good. Okay. Before we do that, I did want to hear exactly how Dennis Allen mentioned Kyler Gordon at that press conference.
I took a look a little bit at the pieces on defense. I felt like there were some pieces in place. You know, in particular, I think there's some things that we have to have in the secondary that I like. I think there's some pieces at linebacker that I'm encouraged by. I think there's a couple of spots up front that I feel like we've got some players. So I think the foundation is there defensively. And I think, look, when Ben asked me if I would be interested, there was a couple of places that I felt like had the pieces in place to potentially be a really good football team player. So I have a vision for how, you know, we can utilize him. And so I think the foundation for what we want to do is there.
Yeah.
So, I find him to be a little vague now listening to that again. When he's like, we got some pieces here. I think we got some linebacker. He's not really naming names.
Maybe he doesn't know the names yet. It was his introduction.
He didn't have
a sheet in front of him with the depth chart that he had pulled up, because it was an introductory press conference. Was that on Zoom, or was that...
That
was on Zoom, because that was the Grote Day,
right? Yeah,
it was
Zoom. And I'm sorry.
That was Grote Day, right?
What day?
Grote. When
Grote?
Mark Grote from the...
Oh, was that Grote Day? That might have been Grote Day.
I think it was.
I get my days. There's been a lot of days. So
Dan
I get
Wheatier?
That's it. Yeah, it was Grote Day. Yes.
Yeah.
He's kind of blowing through those linebackers, and then I see a text here that says that he liked our list, but it says conspicuous that you did not mention Tremaine Edmonds.
No, we mentioned him. He's not top five.
He should be. I mean, the way that he's been paid, and he was Roquan Smith's replacement. Damn it.
And you know what? He might bounce back this year, and I'll be like, oh, that's definitely a top five impact player. But let's be honest, from the linebacker spot, I've seen TJ Edwards do more from that spot.
Oh, 100%.
And I think that's why he's due up. But you know what? Let's go to what you wanted to do.
You want to do it?
Let's do offense right now. All right. So number one for me and number one for you. We may be on different pages just off the top. Joe Tooney.
Oh, wow. Wow. This guy with the Tooney. Okay. I mean, you can never really push back against a good offensive lineman. But I will say, I will see your Joe Tooney. We can put him on the list here. Okay, yeah. Joe Tooney.
So he's in the top five, though, right?
Yeah. We'll put him in the top five. God.
I knew he wasn't going to be your number one because I was going between him and another player, and I was like,
yeah.
No,
and I think the other player was DJ Moore.
Yep, sure was.
Okay, so I'm going to that would have been DJ Moore would have been
your
my
one, and that's fine.
Yeah, we're just doing a draft style here. Okay, who's your so Tooney is the most important Bears offensive player. DJ Moore is the second. You have the third pick. Go ahead, Marshall.
Drew Dahlman.
Oh, look, this guy. Okay, so you want the center.
The best. I'm saying these are the best performers.
Yeah.
I know what those guys' track records.
And pretty important, too. Pretty important. Okay. All right. So that's three.
Does he make your top five?
Do I? Yeah, I guess.
See how you're... But that's my point with this entire roster.
No, it's great.
Because you don't know what you don't know yet.
You don't know what you don't know. You're right. Is it all going to work? Okay, four. Number four. I got to get Caleb in there.
All right, go ahead.
I figured that's what you would do. Caleb Williams is the fourth best player, offensive player on the Bears. Number five. How about for number five? You can't say an offensive lineman.
You know,
I know
to,
you're
right?
going Darnell Wright right here, aren't you? I know you're thinking about Darnell Wright. And don't give me Braxton Jones.
I was definitely not going Braxton Jones.
You're going Jonah
going
Jackson. You're going Jonah Jackson.
I was definitely going Darnell Wright, though. That's where I was going. He's a top 10 pick. Okay. He's been adequate. Like, that's a guy you're depending on. He's, for the most part, on a bad offensive line, has held his own.
Okay,
so if I can't go offensive line. If you can't go offensive line,
who would you go for our final place here?
I probably, even though last season did happen in the way it did, I'd probably still say Cole Kmet.
Okay. All right. What about the...
But that's only because I can't go offensive lineman. He's the closest thing to an offensive lineman I could take.
It's too late, man. You can't. You got to say it. You can't go back and explain it. What about... I guess I can't...
Who else do you want to push for that?
I want to say Rome, but I can't say Rome.
He's not there yet.
Are people just anti-DeAndre Swift?
Yeah.
I feel like he made some plays last year, even though he's not that true back in this loaded division. DeAndre Swift is
coming
a reliable
from the guy.
Back.
Hey, Robbie, I have a question.
But top five.
Hey, Robbie, I have a question.
Top five.
I have a question. Does he make Detroit's top 11?
No, but Detroit's loaded. That's a completely different thing.
Did he the year before he got released? Did he make their top five?
No, he didn't.
Okay, so you're scratching and clawing to find number five.
Did DeAndre Swift not fumble in his first ever game against the Chicago Bears? Did that not happen?
That was a bad omen.
But
I mean, he got a speed option on fourth and goal.
Oh,
we're blaming the play calling now. Yeah,
he has no Dan Campbell, so
he has no individual agency now. It's just he can only do it.
No, Shane Waldron put him in a bad spot early in the year. That Colts game.
Listen, I'm just saying. It speaks to the way we're listing these things out. Top five defense, top five offense. There are still questions that need to be answered before I'm all in on the Bears doing big things in 2025.
So that is so smart what you just said, because I felt so good about the offense, but we don't know yet. Is Rome going to take that next step? Is Caleb going to take that next step? Is he going to have better chemistry with DJ Moore? It's okay to say those two did not have good chemistry for a lot of last year. Is the running backs room going to get better? Is there somebody better than DeAndre Swift? So
is Cole Kmet going to be the primary catcher at the tight end position?
Exactly. Because, I mean, look, I had a lot of sympathy for Cole Kmet last year because he wasn't getting the ball. But somehow, some way, there wasn't a connection yet on the field between Caleb and Cole Kmet. So those are concerns and things that you would think would take the next step, and we'll start to see it once we get cooking with the OTAs and the mini camps and the training camps and Bears.
We're going to Bears it out. But
you tell them I'm excited about the season.
No, you should be excited about that, but you should also be excited about a team that got its first series win of the season.
What?
And proved that the White Sox are superior to the Red Sox.
Can we do the top five
White Sox? We're probably not going to.
I'm done with lists.
Probably not. That's not a list that anybody wants to hear right now. But we will talk White Sox and Garrett Crochet and what he had to say about his team before, and then what he had to say with his actions on the mound. That's coming up. It's Score Middays. Marshall Harris, Mark Grody, 670 The Score.
Yeah, the White Sox invent ways to lose games.
Oh, man. The trip to Chicago could be coming at the perfect time.
Really? Oh, so that's how you're going to play it. That's all I needed for him to do that, and it became personal with me.
hits this one hard to right field, going back at the wall. Luis Robert Jr. ties the game here in the sixth. Baldwin into left field, and the White Sox are going to walk it off in the ninth. Let's go! Brooks Baldwin, the hero, and the White Sox win their first series of the season.
The Score Midday Show, 10-2 on 670 The Score.
We are broadcasting live from the Score Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. It is middays here on the Score. Mark Grody, Marshall Harris, hanging out, talking all things sports. We've talked Masters, we've talked Cubs, we've talked Bears. We got to talk about the White Sox, though, because...
Show me what you got.
Yes, they the South Side, indeed, did stand up 11-1 on Friday, 3-2 on Saturday, and then Garrett Crochet told them to sit down. Unfortunately, that's, yes, that's how things went on Sunday.
7-3, no hit innings, and then broken up by Chase Meidroth, which was part of the Garrett Crochet trade. So there was something parallel about that. That's not the right word, but it was something about that.
A bit of poetic justice, perhaps, that he was the one. Because let me tell you something, it was a bad time watching that game, and then I had to listen to part of it, and I was just, Is he really doing this?
We were going back and forth on the text chain yesterday with the four of us, and I think you were the only one. At least Robbie and I were all for the perfecto. I was for the perfecto just for the idea of seeing, not to stick it to the White Sox by any in any way, shape, or form, because they'd won the series. They took out Boston. I was into it. Like, it would have been a great story to see a player come back against. That would have been better than the Mike Cameron four home runs against the White Sox and see, like, the greatest bleep you to coming back. It was just a story that I wanted to see. Didn't get to see it, though.
But it's not a bleep you. They let him go somewhere where he could actually get his value. Someone paid him lots of money. And you know what? No one here was paying him all that money. And so I think they, you know, tipped their cap and said, thanks for getting us through the worst season of all time before making moves and getting something for him. And, you know, there's several players back. We'll see how it all develops. But I like what Chase Meidroth immediately injected into this team, kind of spearheading that 11-1 win on Friday. And then, you know, to break up the no-hitter, that's something, because I don't know that they were going to get a hit.
You're right.
There was nothing watching that game Sunday which gave you this idea that, oh yeah, the White Sox, they'll break this up. There's no way he can go nine innings of no-hit baseball.
Most of the guys just kind of look like, yeah, we can't hit this guy. It's just not going to happen. But Meidroth is a contact guy, and Stone even called it before he came up, like, there's a very strong possibility that the no-hitter can be broken up right here. And he did, deep, you know, low liner to the back of shortstop and breaks it up. But I want to pick up where you were left off talking about Garrett Crochet, because it seemed like, well, not just seemed like, he had some attitude about the White Sox and the organization, and some of that I understand. But does he not understand that if all things were equal, they would have loved to have kept Garrett Crochet? They drafted Garrett Crochet. They brought him up in 2020. He didn't even have – he never played in the minor leagues with the White Sox because of the pandemic. They would have loved to have built – they couldn't. They're in an awful situation, back-to-back 100-loss seasons. Why would that guy want to have been around here?
Oh, no, I think you're absolutely right. And, yes, I think he understands perfectly. That's why he said what he said. Listen to what he had to say Friday on the difference between playing for the Red Sox and the White Sox.
Just comparing to where I was a year ago, it's just, I mean, last year, obviously, with the White Sox, we weren't expecting to make the postseason. Everyone in the locker room was hoping to make the roster. This year, you know, we obviously have bigger aspirations, and the sense of urgency was great in camp. The sense of veteran presence to your left and right, wherever you were in the clubhouse, was pretty huge. And it's just guys that have been there before. You know, we went out and got Bregman. Rafi's won a World Series. Bueller's won a World Series. It felt like it was the big leagues, you know?
It felt like it was the big leagues, you know? Yes, we do know. We understand. Look. You got to remember what his lens is on this when he's describing starting this season as a member of the Red Sox. Do you remember his reaction when he got the news that he was going to be the opening day starter, despite the fact that he had never made a start in the White Sox organization? That's crazy. So for him, he's talking about the new pressure that comes with not only being now he's a paid man, but also guys around him have had success, postseason success, real success, World Series winning success. And he's thinking about when he got told, oh, by the way, Dylan Cease is gone, you're now our opening day starter for the White Sox, and then looked around and saw a bunch of people trying to make a roster. And also, there were no expectations. There were no expectations.
Zero. Zero. So, yeah, I mean, it's a different light for him. It's like when Chris Sale was out of here. And, like, it was the same thing for him. He leaves the White Sox, and it's all about winning, you know, and all the stops that he's been on. And he's still pitching well. So, I really, let's be honest here, it should, in theory, work out for both sides. And in that little moment, in that one little moment there, Mydroth breaking up the no-hitter, it worked out for both teams. But you're looking at me like, Grody, you are crazy.
I don't think you're crazy. I just think Garrett Crochet was right in his description of the haves and the have-nots, a.k.a. the Red Sox versus the White Sox. And there's just no reason to believe that the White Sox will ever be on the Red Sox level in terms of, we want that guy, we're going to go out, trade for him, and then sign him to a big contract. That's all I think White Sox fans want, is to know that they are also a major league team, mm-hmm. and that it also feels like, quote-unquote, the big leagues when they get guys to come here and play.
Yeah, where is the commitment to that guy? One of the things, too, that I'm thinking about watching these three White Sox games and some of the things that happened. We mentioned Chase Mydroth. Luis Robert got his first home run. Brooks Baldwin with a game winner on Saturday. Shane Smith pitching well last night. Did we see some legitimate things from the White Sox, as in players that, oh boy, might be around when the White Sox are...
Why are you trying to count it?
Winning again? Because they've lost 100 games in the last 2 years. And so far, they've had a horrible season despite what they just did over the weekend.
Can I give you some good news?
So what is the good news?
The good news is, as I sat in the studio on Friday, they were on pace to win 36 games. Now they're on pace to win 43 games.
Yes.
That's called progress.
Okay. So
that's what a series win will do. Now, I don't know how many more series wins they have in them, but that's what a series win will do. Now, back to your question about...
Is, like, Mydroth going to be around when... Like, is this a nice story for now on a bad team? Is Shane Smith a nice story for now on a bad team? Is Brooks Baldwin a nice story now on a bad team? Or are these guys going to be around, or are they projected to be around when the White Sox, in theory, are winning again?
Well, you need boppers. Right, that's one thing we have learned through watching the Cubs the last couple of seasons. You need guys who slug. I'm looking up and down at the slugs right now. I'm going to give you slugs, okay? Vargas, this is yesterday's lineup, 204 slug at the end of the day. Luis Robert Jr., 245 slug at the end of the day. Lenin Sosa, 319 slug. Andrew Vaughn, 208 slug. Michael Taylor, 323 slug. Chase Mydroth, 429 slug. Brooks Baldwin, 366 slug. I mean, this is what you're dealing with. No one's hitting over 400 slugging except for Chase Mydroth, and that's only because he's been up here for 2 seconds.
Well, you had your sluggers in the last rebuild, that's for sure. Isn't it nice that we're not talking about an Eloy Jimenez or Yoan Moncada injury right now? Because you know that's what we'd be talking about with the White Sox. But that's the way that there were... Andrew Vaughn was supposed to be that, right? A guy who could hit the ball over the wall with consistency. So that was the dream, and you're right. But, like, contact first, I suppose, and health first.
Yeah, we might not be talking about that. Mark Grody, Marshall Harris here on Score Middays. But we are talking about an Andrew Benintendi injury. Corey Lee injury. Other guys, it's like... Those guys aren't here anymore, but new guys are here, and they're all hurt.
Yeah, and it doesn't... God, it's easy to forget. Like, even the core guys, when I see Vaughn come up, does he just feel like a relic from way in the past, a part of something that just unfortunately didn't work out? I mean, he's about the last of it, right? In terms of that, all those guys... Moncada's gone. Tim Anderson is gone. Eloy Jimenez is gone. Luis Robert obviously is still there. You know, the
for now. Luis Robert Jr. is there for now.
Oh, yeah.
Because he'll be gone.
Well, right. Yeah, that's the idea.
So Andrew Vaughn might be the last guy remaining, the guy who's slugging 208, as I mentioned. His slash line, by the way, 113 average, 175 on base, and 208 slugging. Mm. Andrew Vaughn, that is your cleanup hitter in yesterday's lineup
Dude,
for the White Sox.
This is
just kind of, I'm trying to paint the picture of this just is what it is. You may slip up, get a great pitching performance, and score a couple of runs and have a chance. And that's why Saturday's win was so impressive, because you just don't expect them to do that.
Yeah, that was pretty amazing. There was one thing that happened. Did you notice this in the game on Saturday? Martin Perez in the fifth inning goes out to the mound, and he didn't like the way the mound felt. So he has Roger Bossert and a couple of the ground crew members.
The sod father.
The sod father. They come out. They fix it all up, patch it all up, get it all to his liking, and then he gives up a couple hits, gives up a run, and then he gets the hook. And he kept looking down at the mound. So I don't know if there was something discomfort, or if Martin Perez was making up his own excuses out there, or you're not buying it.
I don't know what it was either, but I'm not surprised that's how that went down.
Yeah,
and just the scope of the Sox winning this series against Boston, how big it is, and how big of a moment it is for a team that, of course, set the Major League record for losses in a season last year. Listen to what Will Fleming had to say. He was with Matt Spiegel on Hit and Run. Will Fleming is the announcer for the Red Sox on what a loss to the White Sox is actually worth.
It's sort of like, you know, the old adage of you play a game in your division, it counts for two. I think losses here count double, because everyone else is going to come in here and just roll this team. I mean, they lost eight in a row before the Red Sox showed up. And to lose two to them and now have to fight to salvage the finale, you know, with all of these AL Central teams seeing the White Sox so much, those are the teams the Red Sox may well compete with for wild cards. It is a really tough start to this series for sure.
Losses count double.
I mean, is he wrong, though, when in looking at it from that perspective? Everyone else is beating up on this team. When you can't beat up on them, that hurts extra.
Yeah, especially if you are a contender, like Boston is supposed to be. That is where you're supposed to rack up your wins. I mean, and obviously they did not do that. Yeah, they're not on yet. Like the Red Sox, they're not clicking yet.
Well, Garrett Crochet seems to be plenty on.
Very much on. Heading for the 7-3. And by the way, somebody was like saying, Grody, you know, if this was the Cubs, you'd be... No, man. I mean, I'm just jaded enough at this point in my career where I do like watching great things happen on a ball field, even if it happens at the expense of one of the Chicago teams, especially if I know that in the White Sox case, it doesn't matter because they're not going to be contending. It's not like they're stealing a game from the White Sox magic number at this point. So, yeah, I was kind of rooting for it.
Stealing a game from their elimination number at this point.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah, work on that number instead of your win total.
Speaking of elimination numbers, I know a team in town. Their elimination number is one.
Bulls.
Bulls. We're going to talk to Carlos Boozer about the play-in, the playoffs, and everything in between. That's when we come back. More Score Middays. Marshall Harris, Mark Grody on 670 The Score.
At forward from Duke, 6'9", number 5, Carlos Boozer.
There's the momentum. Right there, Boozer with a left-hand throwdown.
Drive, Boozer. In your face, big baby. Boozer spins by Wilcox. And one.
That's what I'm talking about right there. Put him in the spin cycle.
At forward, number 5, he still lives with his mother, Carlos Boozer.
Boozer faces him up, fires, scores, and he is just torching by.
I'm hot. Find me. I'm hot. Real hot.
Stay hot with us. Carlos Boozer, former Bull, doing a lot of work, and he is going to join us right now on the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline. Download the Circa app today. Carlos Boozer joining us on behalf of DraftKings Sportsbook. DraftKings is offering all customers a profit boost for every single game of the NBA playoffs. Simply opt in, apply the token, and enjoy all postseason long with DraftKings. Good afternoon, Mr. Boozer, how are you doing as we get this whole postseason thing cranked up?
I'm doing great, man. I was laughing at the he lives with his mother.
Yeah, Will Ferrell was on you that game.
How did you
that
get
was
that
a great,
one?
Great intro, man. I appreciate that, guys. I don't know, but I love it. My mom is always walking to my house. Always.
So Carlos, this time of year, everybody now, that even the casual basketball fans who are done with March Madness, they can focus completely on the NBA. They look at this as the time where we're going to find out, you know, who are the real contenders out here. And I'm just wondering, as you followed the season all season long, who do you see right now as the favorites to play in the finals, and who do you think is going to win it all?
Yeah, I mean, this is the best time of the year. Real quick, man, this is NBA playoffs. Go to DraftKings, bet responsibly, go try to make some money. Best time of the year right now is to watch the NBA playoffs. To get to your question, in the Western Conference, I feel like we're like nitpicking at Oklahoma City, trying to find a flaw. But honestly, guys, they check off all the boxes, man. They play defense. They got size. They got guys that can hit the three. They can guard their yard. They can help side. And they got a real closer in Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. They check off all the boxes. I think nobody's talking about Houston. They think they're too young. But Ime Udoka has that team playing great defense. They have some young stars in Sengun and I can't think of the kid right now on the perimeter. What's the kid's name?
Green
is just playing outstanding on the perimeter. They got shooters all around them. They got a couple of tough guys over there like Brooks and veteran guys like Van Fleet doing a hell of a job. I think he's on that short list of Coach of the Year. Ime Udoka having that team from where they were to second in the Western Conference. The way that they finished the season, just outstanding. Done a hell of a job of managing guys in and out the lineup. Zubac's having one of his best years of his career, maybe his best year of his career as a center. James Harden is still an incredible threat. Powell almost made the All-Star team. And if Kawhi is healthy this time of the year, playing like Kawhi Leonard, he's their X factor. He can defend everybody. He can still score at a high clip. He plays so efficient. They're dangerous. Denver, I mean, they got the best player on the planet, really, in Nikola Jokic. If their team is healthy and rolling, they're going to be tough to beat. I think Oklahoma City probably comes out the West. You know, LeBron and Luka together and the Lakers can cause some problems because they're two of the smartest basketball players with the ball in their hands. So it'll be interesting to see how that works out. But I think Oklahoma City just checks off all the boxes in the West. Now, to talk about the East, I think it's Boston's run, man. I just honestly think that they have everything that you want. They won the championship last year. If they're completely healthy, especially with Porzingis, they have guys, whether it's Tatum, Brown, Jrue Holiday, White, Pritchard, Al Horford, Porzingis, like the list goes on. All those guys can knock down threes. They play terrific defense. They play great team defense. They have a closer in Tatum. And then they have another guy that can get buckets and close if he needs to in Brown. They got shooters everywhere. They got guys that don't care about getting their name in the paper, like a Jrue Holiday, who's like the glue of that team. I think it's Boston's to lose in the Eastern Conference. I think they're the team to beat and defending champs. Cleveland's had a hell of a run. I think they're a team that's going to be highly sought after, as far as a lot of people are going to look to them to take out a lot of teams in the East, especially Boston, because they've had a great year. They didn't finish the season strong, but over the course of the season, they've had a great season. Looking to see what they can do. Can the Bulls get in?
You know, let's go. Tell us.
They have a lot of
keep going.
A lot of changeover. You know, this team is a team that people aren't looking at seriously, but they keep knocking off people as they come down to the end of the season. They've had some signature great wins, great development by Kobe White. I remember last year when Zach LaVine was out, he was knocking down shots and kind of took over that role as a guy that the team can depend on to be an A-plus scorer. And then this year they actually move Zach, and it's his show, and he's doing a great job. You bring in the kid, what's the Australian kid?
Josh Giddey,
who's just wow, this guy's like a triple-double, man. The guy, he can score, he can pass, he can defend, he can rebound, he can play make. The guy's a walking triple-double. He's so unselfish. He's the guy that you want to have the ball in his hand because he makes great decisions. And you know what the playoff basketball is like. Can you make good decisions under duress? That's what playoff basketball is, and he does that. Guys have developed. I mean, I just think this team is going to surprise a lot of people. They have a huge game coming up in the play-in. If they can get in the playoffs, yeah, they got to go against Boston or Cleveland or whoever it ends up being. But Chicago is an underdog, and for Billy Donovan to have this team to have an opportunity to be in the playoff with all the stuff that's gone on the last 2 years, I'm very impressed by that, especially having Lonzo Ball in and out the lineup. Lonzo Ball, if Lonzo Ball stays healthy, this guy's one of the top young point guards we have in the league. He's been working his butt off to come back and contribute, and he's doing a great job of what he's able to do out there. So shout out to Billy Donovan and that staff for getting this team in the position to be in the playoffs.
No argument that the development has been there. My question is, do you see those guys, Giddy, White, as guys you should pay to make your core going forward, or do they need to get rid of some guys and continue to try to rebuild? We talk about this purgatory thing every year. You know, when you're in the play and good enough not to be in the playoffs, but not bad enough to be at the top of the draft findings, if you will.
Yeah, that is the NBA purgatory, right? Either you're going for a chip or you're rebuilding, right? There's really no gray area. So if you're in that gray area, like what I'm doing, and shout out to the front office too for doing a good job. You got to evaluate your guys. You got to ultimately evaluate your guys, determine who you want to keep as you move forward, as you get high in the draft, or if you go after a free agent this summer where you have a chance to maybe, you know, swing for the fences and go forward, whatever the case may be. But the Bulls, do they need a superstar? They do. They don't have one yet. They got some really good pieces that have proven to play really well in some big games. To see how far they go this year. Did they make the playoffs? Are they in? Once they get in, how far do they go? Who performs well? You're constantly evaluating your current guys to see who you want to keep moving forward. And then also, what can you add in the summertime? Can you get a free agent? Can you make a move that brings in a star? Who do you draft? All these things are so important when you're trying to get back to the chasing titles, right? So they'll do that. They got a great organization, one of the top organizations in basketball. They got the right people in place to try to figure that out, and they will figure it out. I think ultimately this team may even be ahead of schedule. Not saying that, you know, obviously in Chicago, playoffs are the very minimum of what everyone expects, especially as a former Bull or as a Chicago Bulls fan. But in a rebuild, it is what it is. Like, you're not always going to make the playoffs. But for them to be in this situation with an opportunity is impressive to me. A lot of turnover. You move on from DeMar. Zach doesn't really want to be there. You move on from Zach. You got to develop the young guys, doing a great job of doing that. You got guys in that lineup that are hurt, injured. They come back, and now you're in a playing situation. So I'm impressed by them being in this position. But to your question, moving forward, you got to evaluate the guys that you have and then go out and get some stars, because they need some stars if they're going to try to chase titles.
All right, so they need more star power. That's Carlos Boozer, NBA TV analyst, joining us to talk about it. Carlos, we really appreciate your time. Thanks so much, man.
Man, my pleasure, guys. Anytime.
All right, so Carlos Boozer will have his eyes on the Bulls, just like the rest of us. A reminder, tickets on sale now for the Bulls playing game versus the Heat on Wednesday, plus potential home games in round one of the NBA playoffs. Go to bulls.com/postseason for all things Bulls postseason, including info on tickets, watch parties, and more. And a reminder, coming up tomorrow at noon, Adam Amin is in studio.
Oh, man.
To talk all things. Well, I guess he could talk Bulls. He could talk Bears. He could talk White Sox, Cubs. He does it all. It's Adam Amin who will be joining Layla and myself in studio coming up tomorrow. Another reminder, Tony Gwynn Jr. will join the program Tuesday at 1. So tomorrow
good
at 1 p.m.
Stuff.
We got good guests lined up for you. And the Beast, Dame Brugler, by the way. You want to talk draft? Wednesday at noon.
Can I give one? There's a White Sox player that I mentioned earlier that we might be getting on Friday, the next time that I will join you and Layla.
What about thanks?
Or maybe just you. I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's just me, but okay. Mike Vassell, is that?
Mike Vassell. Yeah.
Okay.
Been hearing that we might have him on. For people like, who's Mike Vassell? He's a White Sox reliever who's got a boatload of personality.
We need personality in times such as these.
Yes, we do.
Also, we need to make sure that everyone is paid and accounted for years and years to come. That's the Cubs' dilemma right now. They've got this one shot going for it all, but there's also players not named Kyle Tucker who probably should be paid. I'll explain why when Score Middays with Mark Grody, Marshall Harris continues on the other side.